And Soler cranks it into deep left center field, and now it is 6-3.
Jorge Soler with a three-run homer, and that was it. One swing of the bat for the Royals offensively last night as the Royals fall to the Cardinals with a final of 9-3. Brad Keller, the ace for the Royals, 3-0 with no ERA. He had gone 17 and two-thirds without giving up a run. Gave up a run in the first inning last night. That ended that stretch. He goes four innings. He throws 100 pitches, five runs, six hits, three walks. His ERA balloons from 0.00 to 2.08. The Royals are now 0-17 when trailing after six innings. Here's the skipper, Mike Matheny, on Brad Keller's performance last night against the Cardinals.
Four of those five really had his back up against the wall, which put him in a compromised spot for the deeper you go into a game like that. But he did a nice job. I mean, that first inning's obviously not how he wants to start that game with a couple walks at batsman, but limiting the damage to just one run on not even giving up a hit at that point. But he's pushing 100 pitches there, not having an out, and tough spot to try and work out of.
Matt Harvey on the hill, second start for the Royals tonight against the Cardinals. Adam Wainwright pitching for St. Louis. Royals now 11-18 on the season. First pitch tonight, 7:15. More bad news. Royals left-hander Danny Duffy isn't likely to make his next scheduled start on Wednesday because of left forearm fatigue. Matheny hasn't named a starter for Wednesday, but one possibility is right-hander Jacob Junis, who's eligible to come off the injured list. Back spasms on Sunday. Junis is on the current trip to St. Louis. Matheny also said it's possible that the Royals could go with an opener for Wednesday's game tomorrow against the Cardinals with someone such as Ian Kennedy or Jesse Hahn, and then Junis could piggyback and go multiple innings. So we shall wait and see. Royals falling again as they lose to the Cardinals yesterday by a final of 9-3. Royals reached a TV agreement with Fox Sports Kansas City to continue as the television home of the Royals. The agreement begins with the 2020 season. Years and financial terms were not disclosed. Big news when it comes to the state of Kansas and high school sports. Kansas State High School Activity Association, their executive board, unanimously approved the alternative season model and sends it to a vote of the board of directors. The Acacia Board of Directors will hold a meeting on Friday at 3 p.m. to discuss and vote on the alternative season proposal. One of the things that hasn't been really, Acacia hasn't made this very clear in some of their releases and statements, although if you really read it carefully, they do to a point. I think it could be a little bit clearer, but people kind of gloss over certain words. So you see a headline and people, this is what happens in the world today. People don't take the time to read an article. Even if it's a paragraph long, people just read a headline and then just totally act like they're an expert on everything. Alternative fall season proposed to Acacia Board of Directors. That's the title of the press release statement. Well, then obviously, what are we doing? What are we doing? Why are we playing? Why are we practicing? We're all going to move football to the spring. No, that's not the case at all. Let me put this out there. This is how the statement came across, and if you read it word for word, it does make sense. That's why you read more than the headline. The Acacia Executive Board approved an alternative fall season opportunity for those schools unable to complete a traditional fall season. All right. This model would provide an opportunity for students in our member schools unable to play in the months ahead with an opportunity to benefit from interscholastic activity participation when it is appropriate in their school communities later this school year, according to Executive Director Bill Faflick. The proposal is online. Go to Acacia and their website and you can read the proposal. Basically, what it is that, for instance, let's just focus on football for a moment. The alternative start date would be March 1st. First game's March 17th. It would end April 23rd, so there'd be 8 weeks, but just six football games. So for those Wichita schools and Kansas City schools, Topeka schools, whoever's been affected by not having football already postponed or canceled, you could have, depending on what happens here on Friday, and then if the schools want to move forward with it, you could at least have six football games in the spring. That's six instead of 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Although we're not guaranteed to have that in the fall either. Time will determine all that. In regards to anything else, I'm looking here. Girls golf would be March 1st, alternative start date. Soccer, March 1st. Girls tennis and volleyball would be the other big sport in regards to team sports. Volleyball and football would be in March. And that's for these bigger schools, in essence. And it does seem to be, to me, that Acacia is kind of going down the route that I recommended, and I'm sure I'm not the only one that's recommended it, about the bigger schools, move it to the spring, you at least have a chance to do something. 4, 5, 6A, mm-hmm. maybe, and then 1, 2, 3A, you go ahead and proceed and see if you can get your thing done here in the fall. But will there be fall sports championships? Bill Faflick said yesterday, we're going to wait till at least a month out. We're not going to make any decision now about fall sports, which is smart.
Yeah.
You take your time on that. There's no need to know today whether or not we're going to have, you know, football playoffs and championships and volleyball tournaments. We don't need to know that right now. We just got to assume that we will, and hopefully we do. As for spring championships, I don't think you're going to have any. You're just going to have competition.
Yeah, there's no championships if this does pass for those fall sports that move to spring.
Right. Yeah, and by the way, it does say it here. No state tournaments. No state-level playoffs. You could schedule a final game for a rivalry or a league championship or something like that. So you could have a league title, possibly, although mm-hmm. if you're only playing six games and you have more than six members in your league, which most leagues do, although it would be perfect for the NCAA.
Yeah.
Here in North Central Kansas. So that's the latest with Keisha and what their plans are. And I commend Keisha because, you know, you're trying to make your members happy and it gives them an alternative. Is it the best alternative? No. There is no best alternative. This is the best alternative they can provide.
Yeah.
And I commend them for that. We'll see what the board of directors do on Friday at 3 o'clock. I would expect them to. Okay.
I wouldn't see why.
I don't know why you wouldn't.
I don't get what the advantage to them is to say no to that.
I don't either. Especially if you're not doing championships. There's nothing that Keisha's got to do in regards to those sports. The one problem with it, of course, is kids that... Now, here's the interesting part to this. Let's use Wichita as an example because that's the one where a lot of coaches and people are protesting. I understand people are passionate about sports, but there is more to this whole equation than sports. Education as well, but nobody's protesting that part, which is always interesting to me. If you're a high school sophomore, I could be a freshman, junior, sophomore, senior. It doesn't matter, I guess. But you are, let's say, baseball. You're a good baseball player, and you really enjoy football. They're your two favorite sports. Or you're a volleyball player, and you love track and field. What do you do? If this does happen, you're going to have to choose one.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? For instance, track and field would start March 28th. Volleyball would be March 1st. Football would be March 1st. So track and field would overlap. It would start March 28th. So you could play volleyball and have a few competitions and get your practice in. Football, the same thing. But then, and you're in the middle of that, that's when track and field starts. Do you, and they've extended track and field. According to this, they got June 26th. So what about that part? Because according to this proposal I got in front of me, track and field would end June 26th, but it doesn't say anything about state track and field championships. So would you have a whole set of state track and field championships for the bigger schools a month after the smaller schools, or are we talking about having the huge big track and field championships in Wichita all together and we're just going to wait till the end of June? That can't work.
No, I wouldn't think so.
So we're going to have two, which maybe it'd be good to have two separate state track and field championships because then you have less people there.
That might be what they're thinking too.
Maybe so. So what you could do if you're a girls volleyball player in Wichita and you're big into track and field, you could start volleyball on March the 1st with this alternative plan. You would be done April 23rd. Track and field practices start March 28th. So I guess you miss a few track meets. And you could basically have 2 months of track, and you miss the first month of track, so you can do volleyball or football, or whatever the case may be. So I guess you would still have that opportunity. I'm looking at baseball. Baseball, same situation. So I guess, and that makes some sense. There's no way they can stagger it far enough to where you could do both in the spring. But there is that setup here, if you really look at the dates, where you could... Makes it hard for coaches. Well, I'm going to have three key guys coming back in after football. Or would you be like, listen, I love volleyball, I love track and field, but I want to focus on track and field, so I'm not going to worry about volleyball. Or I'm all about volleyball, so, I may or may not do track later. Or, you know, football would be great, but there's no chance to win a state championship, so I'll just go ahead and stick with track and field because I could win a state championship there. Or I could go baseball because we might have state championships in baseball. That could be an extenuating factor, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I
the bigger schools have enough participation, by the way, to make it all work. But for kids that play multiple sports at the bigger schools, that's why this wouldn't work with the smaller schools, as we've documented before. But for the bigger schools, that's the decision some young people are going to have to make is, well, which one am I going to play, or can I play one and then join in progress the other?
Yeah, it's
not a perfect situation.
It's not, but if they are pushing some of that back, the end dates for those spring sports in this plan, it works to be able to compete and participate in two different sports there. If you're willing to do that, and if you want to put the work in to do that, if you're one of those upper class athletes that wants to do more than one sport, and instead of just focusing on football or volleyball or even tennis, you know, whatever you're doing there, and your fall sport, and you want to have, you know, those experiences and memories that you can create for your spring sport too. So I it's a decent proposal. It's like you said, nothing's going to be perfect, but for those schools that need that cannot play this fall, this is something that I think will work out pretty well for all of them. If you know, it's a decision those athletes need to make themselves, whether they want to try to do two sports in the spring or not. So that's what it comes down to, and what you put your focus on when you get out there this spring and want to compete. So I think it's a good system. Really, I think with what you need,
it's the best alternative based on what you're working with, and that's what I want to stress is this is an alternative plan. Alternative plans typically, obviously, are not plan A.
Yeah,
this is plan B or C, and this is the best potential alternative plan that they've put together. Is there a way to tweak it to be a little better? I'm sure any plan you have out there could be better, but I think this is about as good as you can get. Based on the jockeying and throwing this together. I'm not saying they threw it together. They had probably like 30 different proposals out there from what I'm hearing, 13.
Yeah, I think it sounds like this might have been like the 13th one that finally they figured it out. And there was like 31 different points or something they needed to discuss to make it all work. And it was crazy, but it is. I mean, you're in unprecedented times, so you got to figure out something that at least you can give these schools an option and these athletes and kids an option if they do miss and lose their fall sports season.
All right, there is some fine print here. I just got to, you know, squint my eyes as I'm getting older. Let me see if I can zoom in. No, I can't zoom in. In order to trigger a delayed spring season, schools in general classifications of 1A, 2A, 3A will be considered one band, and schools in general classification of 4, 5, 6A will be considered in a separate band. In order to implement the delayed start end dates for the alternative spring season for all schools in classes 1A, 2A, 3A, more than half of the combined 1A, 2A, 3A schools must participate in alternative fall season in one or more activities. In order to implement delayed start end dates for the alternative spring season for all schools in classes 4, 5, 6A, more than half of them must participate in the alternative fall season in one or more activities. All spring activities within a band will follow either the traditional spring calendar or the alternative delayed start end spring calendar. So
this is basically what we said.
Yeah.
You know, the upper division schools, 4, 5, 6A, they're probably going to have more than 50% that aren't competing because all the Kansas City, Wichita, and, you know,
clearly
Overland Park, you know, Shawnee Mission, all those schools aren't playing. So it's going to be less than 50% that are competing in the fall.
Yeah.
So it'll be more than 50% that would have to move that. So that's where you're going to get the. So you probably would have two different state track meets.
Yep.
And
that's what it sounds like, which is fine with me. I mean, that's okay.
Again, you know, in this climate that we're in right now, it's probably not a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Less kids in one spot. And,
no doubt.
Yeah, if they can get it done.
One of the things we're going to start seeing, in fact, we're already starting to see it. It came out yesterday from the North Central Kansas League. Other leagues are going to do this, and I think it's very smart for the schools, the member schools of each league, to get together and have a blanket fan attendance policy. I think it's a nightmare for parents if every team in your league has a different policy. I don't know what's going to happen in the North Central Activity Association, the NPL. I know they've been talking about it. You probably know more about that than I do. I did receive a note from someone saying that volleyball, at least for Osborne, is one fan allowed per player, which would be no mom and dad. That would be mom or dad, and has to choose. One of them is going to have to be there, or sister, or whatever. Grandma, grandpa, just one. And that's what I've been told. Now, that's for Osborne for volleyball. That's what I've been told. I don't know about the other schools. I don't know if the NPL is going to come up with a blanket policy because their schools are spread a little further away when you really look at it. You know, North Central Activities Association, now that Russell's not a part of it, it's more condensed. So you got basically from Belleville to Ellsworth is kind of the line from point A to point B in regards to the longest distance. And you got a couple of Saline County schools in there too. I think that league will decide to do something like the North Central Kansas League, which involves our friends to the northeast, which would be Concordia. As Concordia and North Central Kansas League have announced expectation requirements regarding spectators at high school events for the 2020-21 school year. Spectator attendance numbers will be limited to 25% of the venue capacity. For football, that's roughly 2 to 4 spectators per player. And for volleyball, that means roughly 2 spectators per player. How they're going to work out the ticket sales, they'll figure that out later. Golf and tennis will have no attendance limits. Cross-country attendance numbers will be based on the number of teams participating and the preference of the host school. Spectators will not be allowed near participant groups or on the field or courts, which makes sense. And social distancing required indoors, outdoors. Temperatures will be checked prior to admission. Temperatures must be less than 100.4 degrees to enter these events. So that's what the North Central Kansas League has decided. And you're going to see different leagues and even different schools have different rules. And you're just going to have to hopefully, you know, find out before you travel. Can we all go or not? Or can I be outside the football stadium able to watch from my car and one other person or two people go in to watch, but I can stay outside and still somehow watch? And that can happen. Doesn't work for volleyball, but.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you got a hole in the roof you can peek through.
You know? Yeah, it's not going to work out real well on that.
Could be a problem when it rains, but, you know.
just a little bit.
Seal it back up when you're done, all right, would you? So, yeah, it'll be interesting. Have you heard anything on the NPL as to?
Not a blanket yet. I'm still talking to some of the people there, and I do have one person on the inside that said he'd let me know when he knows for sure what the whole situation will be. So yeah, we're just kind of holding out, and I actually might know a little bit more, hopefully even today, possibly. But I'm not gonna guarantee that. But I've heard a lot of the indoor sports are gonna be like that, where one or two parents can go. Now football, I don't know, being, you know, the 8-man level, I don't know that there's going to be, one school has told me right now that they don't think there's any restrictions on fans in football right now. Now I don't know if that's going to be, actually I've heard that from two schools too, now that I think of it, but I don't know if that's going to be league-wide or what that situation will be for football for Northern Plains League teams. So I'll definitely, when we know, you'll know for sure.
I'm not going to repeat this over the air, but I just got an email. That's not cool, but okay. Something I wasn't expecting. I just got an email about situation with media and sitting. I'll go over with you later. But,
okay.
Wasn't expecting that one. So now all of a sudden we're going to have to get longer cords to connect things and this and that and whatever else and then hope to God the weather's all right. But, you know, it is what it is. I'm not going to try to complain too much. I mean, we're trying to do the best we can with the situation we have. It's better that we're at least allowed to cover the games than not be there at all. So we're going to have to deal with this, obviously, over and over. There'll be changes, disruptions, and it'll be a challenge for us. It'll be a challenge for the fans and parents. It'll be a challenge for the administrators. It'll be a challenge for teachers and coaches and everything else, no doubt. Okay, Steve Tiernan, head coach of the Osborne football team. Well, he's got the defending state champions from last year. Well, not everybody's back, of course, but they're going to try to defend their title. And Steve Tiernan, we had Brad Gober, head coach of the Beloit football team yesterday. Today, Steve Tiernan joins us.
Welcome back here on Katy Country 94 on the Sports Ticket as we are joined by Steve Tiernan, the head coach of the Osborne Bulldog football team. Coach, coming off of last season's 13-0 state championship in 8-man Division II and getting ready for the 2020 season. Undoubtedly, things have probably looked a little bit different for you to get things started this year. We'll talk about that coming up later here during this interview. But as you've had a chance to get kids into practice since August 17th there, what do the numbers look like and how has everything gone so far for you, Coach?
You know, so far so good. I think we're going to have about the same number, about 16 or 17 out, and which that's a good number. I mean, a few more would always be good. We've only got 2 seniors, which it's kind of bad to miss that experience. But we do have some good football players coming back and actually some good young guys coming up, so it should be a fun year.
You do lose six seniors from last year's team, and every single one of these guys was a pretty big contributor for you. Your top two rushers and Darian Holloway at running back and Steele Walters at quarterback, and you had a lot of guys that you're going to miss on the defensive side of the ball as well, and that was something that you guys improved as the season went on. How do you go about trying to fill in those gaps that are left by those six guys that graduated?
You know, I mean, you said the right word, though. I mean, fill in. It's not like you're going to replace them. It's not like you're going to say, all right, you're out. You graduated, so we're going to just replace you with so-and-so, because that's not going to happen. But we will find guys that play those positions, and hopefully the guys that are back are a little bit better to where it's going to take a little pressure off the new guys. And like that, it's just amazing how as screwed up as this year is. I mean, we got more summer weights in than we've ever got in my whole life. I mean, we got a lot of summer weights in. They kind of took away the rules as far as when you can have football camp. So we had football camp just the week before we started practice. And, I mean, we're in, like, third or fourth week form right now. I mean, these guys seem they know what we're doing. And like I said, they look good, but we're not going against anybody. So who knows, but so far so good.
Mason Scher is one of the guys that you have back, and he did a lot of things for you on both offense and defense last year. He had 817 rushing yards and over 1,200 all-purpose as far as with the ball in his hands. He had 89 tackles and two interceptions on defense. How much are you relying on him? And also Lance Kayser got that 68 tackles for you last year and was kind of a steady force on your defense. How much are you relying on those two guys, I guess, for leadership and guys that understand your system here?
Well, of course a lot, but I really see Mason having a breakout year this year. Not that he had a bad year last year. He had a very good year, but he just always ain't been in the shadow of those other guys. And now that they're gone, I think he's going to really stand out and step it up, which I really look on both sides of the ball. Then you said Lance Kayser, you know, he was just very good at wherever he played last year. So I just expect that to carry over, that he's going to be very good at where he's playing this year. So hopefully it does carry over.
You see any guys that are really standing out to you here early on, maybe that could fill in some roles maybe individually that you're seeing, or is everybody pretty much fighting for the right to have that opportunity?
Well, I mean, everybody's always fighting for that opportunity. I mean, Dallas Beckwith, the senior who didn't get to play much last year, I mean, he came most summer weights, and he's actually kind of catching my eye a little bit. Some young guys, we actually just got pads on last Friday was supposed to go full pads, so we did a tackling drill, and some of those young guys, I mean, I won't say they're great football players, but boy, they're pretty fearless. I mean, that's a lot of it right there. If you get the fear out of them, then start building from there. I mean, they don't seem to have much fear, so I think they're going to be able to contribute somewhere, you know, if it's special teams or somewhere. But yeah, so far so good.
I know Grady Walters, a guy that did some decent things for you at times last year, but he was battling some injuries. How's Grady looking right now?
Grady's looking like he holds my clipboard and goes and gets the dummies most of the time, because he did have knee surgery, so okay. He's probably not going to play football. So, yeah. But I did hear that I was him telling me, so I don't know if it's wishful thinking or what, but he said the doctors and the physical therapists and all those guys have said he is way ahead. Way ahead of where they thought he'd be, so that's good. And I'm sure he's doing everything he's supposed to do, so when he does come back, he'll be back ready to go.
Obviously, as I talked about at the start of this, things are a little bit different here in 2020. You talked about, you know, camps were moved. You didn't have to have them at a certain time. You can have them whenever. The COVID-19 situation obviously is causing problems and changing things up for a lot of different schools and districts in the area. What are some of the challenges that you've seen through that so far, and how have you gone about just kind of, you know, going through the kids and making sure that they're still focused on football, even though there's a lot of uncertainty about it?
You know, I think I'm probably more worried about it than they are, as far as are we going to have a season, are we not? I mean, they've never let on to me anyway that they're worried about it. And like I said, I hope I would do the same thing they've done. I mean, we had a lot of guys that just never missed a day of summer weights. Like, we had like 32, I don't remember the number for sure, but a lot of sessions. And I think if I was in those shoes, things have, we're probably not even going to have it anyway. Do I want to get up at 6 in the morning to go do this or not? But like I said, they don't seem to be overly worried about that, which that's a good thing, because, I mean, as I tell them that every day, that's beyond our control. All we can do is worry about it. Make sure you don't get it, make sure you don't spread it, make sure all that stuff. And other than that, I mean, if if Downs gets it, that's nothing we can do about that. So, yeah. So, hopefully we stay clean. But that is the other thing that you just said is I've also stressed to pretty much everybody that this year somebody's probably going to get it. Now, knock on wood, we've got an administration that's, I think, smart enough that they see that if one guy gets it, doesn't mean everybody's got to go quarantine. If one guy gets it, he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then for 2 weeks, and then if, you know, another guy starts feeling bad, he goes, gets tested, and if he has it, he's gone. But so we're going to need everybody. Everybody's going to have to know exactly what they do and how to do it and when to do it. And so that does make it a little tough as far as our depth goes, because a lot of times I would have one guy maybe play three positions. Mm-hmm. You know, he'd learn three positions. Now we're just saying, you learn this one position. So if he gets bad, if he gets sick, that's where you're going. So it does diminish the depth a little bit, but also it gets them where they know that position very well.
One other difference on your squad this year is you got a new assistant coach, David Straits, come over. You did some things with him and Solomon. How's that working out for you?
Real good. I mean, it's nice. And like, it was two last year, Aaron Geist and Isaac Wilson. Those guys were great. They did everything we needed. I mean, obviously, it worked out pretty well. But to have Dave here, it's just kind of I coached with him at Solomon for 2 years. And by the end of that second year, which is the first time I've ever done this, I just turned the defense over to him so you can have it. It's just yours.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be kind of nice not having to worry as much about both sides of the ball and know that there's a guy there that's going to do a good job with it.
Steve Chernin, the head coach of the Osborne Bulldog football team here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94. Steve, thanks for taking some time to be with us, and we'll look forward to chatting with you coming up here once the season gets going.
Yep, sounds good. Thank you.
Interesting point that Coach Chernin brought up was the, you know, getting the fall camp right ahead of when practices start and then more time to lift weights, and that they're further along than they've probably ever been, and he's coached for a very long time.
Yeah, and you know, yeah, I never really thought of it from that angle, but it is with everything that you can do there in that short amount of time. There's two ways to look at that. I guess coaches are always saying, "Hey, we're tired of hitting each other." That's an added week, you know, against each other and you're not seeing competition. But it also adds to your experience and getting your skills set up, especially on a team that needs to fill in some holes that they lost as far as skill players are concerned. So I think it's, as Coach Tiernan's talking, it's been an advantage for his team to have that extra time and be able to put in the system a little bit cleaner and longer.
Well, we'll see if we have a football season.
Yes.
We shall see. We're just getting underway for school for some. Just started last week. I know Sylvan, I talked to somebody from there today. They're going to start tomorrow. Smith Center doesn't start till the 31st, so we'll see how it all works out. Like we said, one school can have everything going perfectly. The other school has one case, and that'll put a kibosh on it.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the way the precedent's been set across the state of Kansas thus far when you quarantine the whole team. I was talking to a coach the other day. You know, that's one thing I haven't understood. Like, and I think that has to do with the relationship that the county health department has with their teams and the schools, is I don't know, like, for instance, Blue Valley, they quarantined their whole team. They have a ton of kids on the team. One kid had a positive test. Was that kid really around everybody to where they all have to quarantine? Like, for instance, if you have a freshman, like you have the freshman group, most freshmen aren't going to play varsity most time. So you have a freshman, and he's always playing with the JV group, but he's never playing with the varsity group, or he's playing on the freshman team, and a freshman on your team gets it. Why should the whole team quarantine if he was never around the varsity? That part I haven't understood, because, you know, you go contact tracing. Like, one person in town gets COVID, you don't tell everybody to quarantine in town.
Yeah.
Or even in the business you're at. Well, you know, didn't work that week on the shift, so she doesn't have to quarantine.
Yeah, I mean, the things I always read right here in the last month or so have said, you know, if you're within 6 feet of somebody for more than 10 minutes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think that.
Right.
It's not a constant, even on football field.
Well, but then some people have told me that it's a cumulative of 10 minutes now. It's not 10 minutes at one time. It's a cumulative, which who the heck keeps track of that?
Yeah.
Oh, 37 seconds.
Wait, what?
Like, how in the world? It's just so, you know.
Maybe that's why they're doing it, because they can't figure out if they can add it up the right way or not. I don't know.
I don't know. I just think when you have a ton of kids on a football team and one kid gets it, I don't know if you really have to quarantine the whole team. If you trust the coaches and say, hey, that kid was only with this group. You know, this kid was only with this group.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess to me it's always the – basically what happens is it's the blanket. We're safe and sorry. We'll just – one person – has a positive test, so shut everything down. Freak out. NBA playoffs going on.
Dennis Schroeder now going to use a little clock. Going to work on Jeff Green. Schroeder spinning, driving, flipping. Good!
Dennis Schroeder with 30 points, a career high in the playoffs for him. Chris Paul with 26. The Thunder down 2-0, now have tied the series with the Rockets at 2-2. Rockets shot NBA record 58 threes in yesterday's game. And they made their first eight in the second half, and then they went three for their next 24. Live and die by the three. That's why I never take the Rockets seriously as a title contender. I just don't. I just don't think you can win a championship by shooting a ton of threes. Can you get hot, win a series? Yeah, but I don't think you can get all the way through the playoffs. So the Thunder and the Rockets tied 2-2. What I really enjoyed, Chris Paul with the mid-range game. It's a lost art. Him and Kawhi Leonard are two of the best at it.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes them great players. You take what the defense gives you. You know, Doncic is fun to watch because he can drive it. He can stop and pop. He can take the three. You know, LeBron, neither. They're really, really, really good players. Can do all that stuff. You know, like you look at Damian Lillard, it seems to be most of the time it's shooting threes or driving it. And James Harden kind of the same way, although I know they're capable of hitting mid-range jumpers, but it's kind of like a layup or a three-pointer or it don't matter.
Yeah.
And I enjoy watching guys that can do all of it. And LeBron can do it, Kawhi can do it, Doncic can do it, and, you know, Chris Paul can do that. And it was fun to watch. And I'm a Thunder fan, so I enjoyed it. 117-114, Thunder beat the Rockets. That series tied 2-2. The Heat finished off the Pacers on the sweep, which surprised me a bit. 99-87. And the Bucks, as I said yesterday, not going to lose another game to the Magic after losing game one, and they haven't. They roll 121-106. Giannis with 31 points, 15 rebounds, 8 assists. They're up 3-1 in that best of seven. And the Lakers pound the Trailblazers last night, 135-115. This game was over before it started. It was Mamba Day because 824. Yesterday was 824. Of course, Kobe wore two jerseys, which he basically scored 16,500 points in each one. So he had like two different Hall of Fame careers with two different jerseys and won titles in each, like three with one jersey, two with the other.
Mm-hmm.
So the Black Mamba, of course, no longer with us, passing away in that helicopter crash tragically back in January along with his daughter Gigi. Pretty wild stuff yesterday. The Lakers jumped out to a 15-0 lead, and they also led 24-8.
They almost scored 81 points in the first half.
They scored 80. And Kobe had 81 against the Raptors,
yeah,
which
in a game.
Which is but, the most in the modern day of basketball.
See it, you know,
yeah, it would have been.
81 and a half. And
somebody missed a free throw. Shame on them.
Yeah.
That's pretty weird, though, isn't it? 24-8 on 8-24 for Kobe. And they're wearing the Mamba jerseys and all that, which was cool. LeBron with 30 points. Anthony Davis, 18 points. 17 minutes. He left due to back spasms. And the Lakers were up 80-51 at halftime. You know, there were some people, I didn't buy the hype. I wasn't. And I wasn't buying the hype after game one even. You know, there's all these people jumping on the wagon of the Blazers going to give the Lakers a lot of problems. The Lakers aren't playing well in the bubble. Da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, oh, my goodness gracious. Chill out. It's LeBron. LeBron's never lost a first-round series. Let me repeat that. LeBron has never lost a first-round series in the NBA playoffs ever. And he has Anthony Davis on this year's team. And they were the number one seed. They're not losing to the Blazers in a best-of-seven series. It's not going to happen. Not going to happen. Ooh, they lost game one. That's only the second time LeBron's ever lost game one of the first-round series, ever. The other time, came back, beat the Pacers in seven.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, LeBron is still, I think, the greatest player on earth right now. He's the best overall, all-around player. I think him and Kawhi are right there. And Doncic and Greek the Freak are not far behind. But Anthony Davis is a tremendous player. The Lakers, questions about whether they can make threes, question about their perimeter defense. But if it's funny because people that were jumping on the Blazer bandwagon were talking about the Lakers' defense. I'm like, were you watching the Blazers' defense? I mean, the Blazers' defense is atrocious.
Yeah.
They gave up 80 last night. 80 in the first half. They were down 15-0 before they blinked. I mean, the Blazers got injuries. McCollum's got fracture in his back. He's played fairly well. Carmelo's on their team, so you know they can't be good defensively. And yeah. Damian Lillard is not a great defensive player, and he's undersized at guard at times. The Blazers aren't big. I mean, they got Whiteside and Nurkic, but I wouldn't say they're physical presences. So, I mean, I didn't buy the hype. I never did, and I wasn't going to until the Blazers actually proved me wrong, and they haven't. The Blazers won the game one. Good for them. The Lakers figured some things out. And that's the other thing about series, and people don't understand when it comes to the playoffs. When you get all riled up about, well, this team beat this team 3-0 in the regular season, or, well, yeah, but did you know that Steph Curry didn't play in two of those games?
Yeah.
Remember they were talking so much about the Raptors and the Warriors and last year in the finals. Well, you know, they played each other. Yeah, you know what? All the games they played, either Kawhi or Steph Curry did not play. So how do you put any stock in that? Because you know they're going to play every game in the NBA finals, which they did. And you're getting all riled up about, well, you know, they played and the Raptors beat the Warriors or whatever it was. It's like, yeah, they played each other spaced over the course of a whole season. Did they play three times in a week? Oh, no, they didn't. Because that's what happens in a series. You make adjustments. That's what basketball playoffs are about. It's the same way in baseball, okay? You, and hockey too, you make adjustments. If you get pounded in a game, you're going to make adjustments. You're going to try something different. And it may work. You mess with your lineup. You mess with small ball. You go big. You decide to be more aggressive and attack. You change your defense. You can play zone now in the NBA. You could do that. You could double team the star player every time, make somebody else beat you. You can make adjustments. And LeBron is so astute and so smart, he can make adjustments himself. He's a coach on the floor. So the Lakers lost game one to the Blazers. Whoop-dee-freaking-la-dee-da. You know, the Bucks lost game one. Let's all freak out because the one seeds lost game one. No, 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 no. Guess what? Neither of the number one seeds has lost a game since. And they've been dominant since then. It hasn't been like, ooh, the Lakers got by with two lucky wins. Or, ooh, the Bucks, they squeaked by with a lucky bounce of the ball and a bad call. No. The Lakers and the Bucks have established themselves that this is why we're the number one seeds in our conferences, and they have kicked the living daylights out of the eight seed since they lost game one. And it hasn't even been that super competitive. It really hasn't. I mean, the Blazers have been a little more competitive than the Magic. Last night, they weren't. And that was a game the Blazers had to have. And then, on top of it all, Damian Lillard leaves. I saw somebody go, well, Lillard got hurt. They were down 30 when he got hurt. Don't tell me Damian Lillard got hurt. So the Blazers, that's why they lost. You clearly didn't watch the game and don't know what you're talking about. That's another example of a person reading a headline and not reading the story. Well, Lillard got hurt. That's why the Blazers lost. No, they were down at one point by 38 points. And when he left in the third quarter, Lillard only had 11. I heard this. Well, Damian Williams is going to light up the Lakers. Nobody can guard Lillard. Who cares if they can't guard Lillard? If they can hold the other guys in check, Lillard ain't going to score 40, 50, 60 a game.
That was the issue for me the whole time. It's like Lillard's CJ McCollum's got a back that's not right.
Exactly.
Lillard can't carry the whole team in a playoff series.
No. And
against the number one
seed. And you're not going to rely on Carmelo to score you 25 a game anymore. So Lillard would have to score probably 40 every night for the Blazers to have a chance. And to me, that's just not realistic, especially in the playoffs. Which I know this year's playoffs in the bubble, the defense hasn't been as good. I do get that. But there is more intensity, certainly on certain possessions in a playoff game when it comes down. And you should see that, you know, the Rockets and the Thunder were that way yesterday. So I'm not surprised at all. And I said after the Lakers lost game one that I don't think they're gonna lose the game the rest of the series. And right now that looks to be prophetic. And I wanted the Blazers to win, don't get me wrong. But the Blazers, everybody's talking about, the Blazers are a tough matchup for the Lakers. Who's going to guard Lillard? As I said all along, who's going to guard Anthony Davis? Who's going to guard LeBron? Nobody on the Blazers can guard LeBron. Nobody. They got Carmelo guarding him sometimes. Well, that's a great idea. But that might be their best alternative. The Blazers are not good defensively. And you go up against two of the five best players in the NBA and Anthony Davis and LeBron James, that's trouble. So you somehow people overlook actually doing research and facts and stats, and they just get caught up in the, the Blazers, they jumped to the eighth seed, and ooh, they beat the Grizzlies. Yeah, the Grizzlies, who nearly just completely fell apart in a bubble. You know, the team that probably might have given the Lakers more problems would have been the up-and-coming Suns.
Possibly.
Possibly. Yeah. They're playing great ball, red hot. Now, granted, playoff basketball is different.
I don't.
I still think the Lakers would have won in five.
Yeah. I don't think it would have been any different how it finishes here.
I agree. But it might have been maybe a little more entertaining, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. A lot of people don't know anybody that plays with the Suns, but Devin Booker's a pretty good player.
Yeah.
So Lillard got hurt, and he's got an MRI on his knee. Came to a jump stop, and you worry if he tore his ACL or something like that, which would be a shame because he's fun to watch. But I don't hold out hope he's going to play the next game. If he doesn't play next game, does anybody think the Blazers are going to win? I don't care if Lillard's healthy. I don't think the Blazers are going to win another game in the series. So
it's not looking good.
No, it's not.
Portland, anyway.
No, it's not. The Lakers cruised to a victory last night in the NBA playoffs. And so the Lakers are up 3-1 in that series. The Bucks are up 3-1. Thunder Rockets 2-2. Heat swept the Pacers 4-0. Every series in the East was a sweep except for the one seed, the Bucks, who lost in game one but they won the last three. You got two really interesting games tonight. Game 5, 5:30 on TNT. It's the Jazz and the Nuggets. The Nuggets have to win to keep their season alive. I don't think they're going to. I just don't think it's a good matchup right now for the Nuggets. I think the Jazz are mentally tougher than the Nuggets. And I do think when you get to the playoffs, if you have the best player on your team in the series, you're going to win 9 times out of 10. And Jamal Murray is a great player. Don't get me wrong. I love watching him play. The best player in the series is Donovan Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
The Jazz have the best player in the series. I think the Nuggets overall have maybe more talent. But there's Michael Porter's a guy that, a great offensive player, has no clue how to play defense. Now, in fairness to Michael Porter, he didn't play hardly all in college. And in high school, I guarantee you, wasn't told to play a lot of defense.
No.
So he's going to have to learn how to play defense to stay on the floor. And he's being exposed. Every time he's on the floor, all the Jazz do is play pick and roll until they eventually get a switch. And then Mitchell's, like, licking his chops to go up against Michael Porter. So Porter's a really good offensive player. And then you got to decide, is he worth being on the floor? If he's not making shots, you got to get him off the floor because the Jazz are going to find the mismatch every single time. And it's smart basketball. And Quinn Snyder, by the way, doesn't get enough credit for what he's done at Utah.
No.
Remember, he flamed out as head coach at Missouri?
Mm-hmm.
He's done a great job. So the Jazz are up 3-1. I think the Jazz are going to finish it tonight. If this was a home court thing where you're in Denver, it'd be different. But I think the Jazz are going to finish it tonight. I thought the Nuggets played pretty well the other night and still lost.
Yeah, I'll just pick Denver to be different.
Okay.
Just for fun.
Now, the series that's probably the most interesting and most exciting and entertaining is the Mavericks and the Clippers, which you got Doncic, and I don't know if Porzingis is going to play tonight. That's 8 o'clock on TNT. The series tied 2-2. Luka coming off that unbelievable performance, 43 points, the game-winning three at the buzzer, 17 rebounds, 13 assists on a bum ankle, and no Porzingis to play. The Clippers, Paul George has been AWOL. He is really struggling shooting the ball. I don't know if he's lost his confidence or what, which is scary for a guy that's supposed to be, you know, one of the top players in the league. I picked the Clippers to win the NBA championship before the season. I've never wavered on that. I am starting to waver a little bit, and here's why. Not because I the Mavericks might win the series. I still take the Clippers to win the series. I'm not going to jump the boat here. And by the way, if the Mavericks win the series, I'll enjoy that. That'll be fine. But if I think the Clippers will still win the series. I think they'll just get too much experience and they will find a way. But Doncic, of course, is the wild card to all of this. But the Clippers will not, as I predicted before the season, the Clippers will not. Let me make this clear. I predicted the Clippers to win it all, and I felt pretty confident about that. But the Clippers will not win it all, and I will be dead wrong if Paul George doesn't start playing better. I don't think there's any way the Clippers beat the Lakers if Paul George keeps playing the way he is. If that's the matchup, Clippers and Lakers. Like, I thought the Clippers are deeper, and I think the Clippers are the better team than Lakers. When both teams are clicking, I think the Clippers are the better team. But if Paul George continues to struggle like he has, I mean, he's been really struggling, then I don't think the Clippers can get – I don't think the Clippers are going to win a best-of-seven against the Lakers or probably even the Bucks or the Raptors if Paul George isn't starting to click. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Because you can't count Lou Williams score 36 off the bench every night.
No.
And even though he did the other night, they still lost. And the other thing is the Clippers are supposed to be great defensively, and they're missing Patrick Beverley. There's no doubt about that. He's missed the last three games of the series with a calf injury. He comes back, that would help him. But and Landry Shamet's played pretty well in the starting lineup, former Shocker, who I didn't think would do this well in the NBA, so that's been a pleasant surprise, I think, at least to me. But the Clippers just are not playing good defense. Doc Rivers talked about it. He said the Mavericks are beating us off the dribble. They're dictating things to us. That's what the Clippers are supposed to do. They're the veteran team. And they've got supposedly two of the top 10 players in the league. And they're in a dogfight because there's a 21-year-old guy from Slovenia that's pretty doggone good.
Yeah.
And then other players are, he's making other players around him better, like Trey Burke the other day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean.
So who are you picking tonight? Game five, Mavericks, Clippers.
I'm going to pick the Clippers to get it tonight.
I'm going to pick the Clippers to bounce back tonight. Obviously, they lose tonight. They're in big trouble. I just think they're if they would, if this was the flip side, if the Clippers had just tied the series 2-2 with the Mavericks and Kawhi hit a deep shot at the buzzer, I think the Mavericks wouldn't know how to handle tonight. But the Clippers are experienced. Kawhi is experienced. They have Doc Rivers is experienced. Doc Rivers, I think, is a really good coach. I would love to play for him. The Clippers, I think, have the experience that they'll be able to bounce back tonight. But Luka is just capable of blowing all that to smithereens.
Oh, for sure.
You know? Man, what a performance the other day. That was fun to watch, unless you're a Clippers fan.
Clippers fans did not
enjoy
that performance from Luka Doncic.
Exactly.
Sunday.
No doubt. All right, the hockey NHL playoffs are going on. The Islanders beat the Flyers last night 4-0. Islanders up 1-0 in that series. The Stars beat the Avalanche 5-2. Stars up 2-0. Remember, the Stars were 12 seconds away from being down 3-1 in their first-round series. How many times do you see that every year? A team is in a series or dodges a huge bullet, like in the NCAA tournament. Team loses, barely wins a first-round game, and then goes on to do great things. Remember Michigan? You know, if Houston makes a couple free throws, they're out in the Sweet 16, I think it was, or maybe the second round, and they go all the way to the national championship game. I mean, it can easily happen. Florida, Mike Miller had a shot to beat Butler.
Yeah, I was going to say Florida should have lost to Butler,
and then they went on to the national championship game and lost to Michigan State. I mean, it happens, and the Stars are a team that should have been down 3-1 in their series and probably cooked. And instead, they scored in the final few seconds of that game four against the Flames, and then won games 5 and 6, and now they're on a roll. It's like they had a new lease on life.
Yeah.
And now they're up 2-0 in the Avalanche. And once again, it comes down to matchups, too. Stars obviously have a good matchup against the Avs, to my chagrin, because the Avs are my hockey team. Until the Kraken get going, till the Kraken stop popping and cracking, then the Avs are my second favorite team. Until the Kraken start their expansion year next year, 0-12, and then I'm off the wagon, but I'll wear the jersey. Just because I think it'll look cool. The Bruins and the Lightning today, game two, Bruins up 1-0, and the Canucks and the Golden Knights. Vegas hosting, well, they're not hosting it because they're in Canada. Golden Knights will be the home team on the scoreboard, I believe, though. They're up 1-0 against the Canucks. That's the NHL playoffs. College basketball, is it around the corner? Well, we hope so. The NCAA has four potential start dates for the upcoming men's and women's college basketball seasons. Now, keep in mind, Pac-12 is not going to play till January 1, so this doesn't pertain to them. Option one, practices begin about a month from now, September 29th. First date of the season, November 10th. Option two, practices start 10 days later, October 9th. Season starts 10 days later, November 20th. Option three, 5 days later, October 14th, practices. First day, November 25th. Option four is another 10 days later, October 24th. Start the season, December the 4th. Those dates are not fated to be the only dates discussed, but they are the initial trial balloons the NCAA is seeking feedback on. So let me try that again. Option one is start the season November 10th. Option two, November 20th. Option three, November 25th. Option four, December the 4th. Of those four dates, which one do you think it'll be? If it will be any of them, let's just assume it is one of those. Which one do you think it will be? The 10th, the 20th, 25th, or December 4th?
I don't know. I'm going to say the 20th.
Okay. Why?
I don't. They'll probably just, by caution, push it back a little bit anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. What do you gain by 20th to the 25th?
I didn't quite understand that either.
The 5 days. The thinking was in that of like just let's just 5 days will be the next round.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to say it's December 4th. The latest one. And here's why. Because that would be after Thanksgiving and games could be in a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'll be later than December 4th, to be quite honest with you. But if they get going at all. But I think they're going to have to play in a bubble. I think you're going to have to, some kind of bubble's going to, and they're talking a lot more about it. So if it's a bubble we're talking about campus, kids off campus going home from Thanksgiving till after the new year, then to me, December 4th or November 25th would be the more likely. November 25th would be What is that? Right before, when's Thanksgiving? It's always on a Thursday, obviously, but Thanksgiving this year is November 26th. You're not gonna, are you gonna start the season day before Thanksgiving?
Well, I don't know if they'll, well, I don't know. I mean,
really?
You're still practicing. Maybe that's why it's the 25th, because that's when, maybe that's the answer to our question. People are probably going home at that point.
And, that's the first day of the season is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Not the first day of practice.
Yeah, but it, like first day of practice is going to be before all of that anyway, no
matter
what.
And if they're going to keep them there anyway. See, to me, it's one of the last two options. It's going to be around Thanksgiving they start the season, or, you know, a week after Thanksgiving, December 4th. I don't think it's going to be option one or two. I mean, I can see practice is starting, but I don't see the first day of the season starting November 10th.
No, I don't see that.
That seems too early.
Yeah.
But we shall see. Dusty, there's a job opening for you if you're interested. The Philadelphia 76ers, you can coach Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. Sixers fired their coach because that's the problem in Philadelphia, is the coach.
Yeah.
They got rid of Jimmy Butler, didn't keep him, who was a better fit for him last year. And, of course, they were one crazy bounce on a three-pointer by Kawhi Leonard. If that ball doesn't go in, that game goes into overtime. The Sixers very well could have won Game 7, and they've been in the NBA Finals last year.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, now a year later, they get swept by the hated Celtics, their arch rival. Their best player defensively was out, injury, Ben Simmons. They let go of J.J. Redick, who was a really great outside shooter.
Yeah.
And so what did the Sixers have? Guys that can't shoot the ball from the outside. And then Embiid starts chucking threes, which Embiid needs to quit shooting threes, by the way. He's not a great three-point shooter. You're 7'2". Stay in the paint. Occasionally you pop out, fine. He settles too much, in my opinion. I think Embiid's a great player, and I think he still has a lot more potential. And I don't know if he's going to completely realize it or not. I just wonder about his mentality sometimes.
Without a doubt. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I think sometimes he's still very immature.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the best way to put it. I think he just feels like, you know, I'm going to go out here and dominate.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, he's, you know, there's a difference between cocky and confident.
Yes.
He is on that line a lot.
I agree with you.
He goes over to cocky a little bit too much sometimes.
I agree with you.
And I think that's probably the best comparison I can have there, because he could reach to way beyond what he's done even already. And I just feel like I don't want to say content, but I do think he's cocky sometimes and just thinks that, oh, I'm better than you. I don't have to do this or that.
Right. I he's not a leader, and they need a leader. And the coach, a lot of people highly respect him. They think Brett Brown will get a job pretty quickly if he wants one.
Oh, I would think so, too.
He's the scapegoat. They fired him, and everybody saw it coming. Brett Brown knew it. In fact, there was talk about him not coming back this year, which was insane. One crazy, weird bounce by Kawhi Leonard to go in a three to beat you in Game 7. How could you not bring him back? They brought him back, and then he was hampered by the injuries, and it's not his fault that they didn't re-sign Butler and got rid of Redick. That's Elton Brand's fault. I thought Duke people were supposed to be smart. Kidding. That was a low blow shot at Duke, because I'm not a fan of Duke at all. Can't stand Duke, quite honestly. The only guy I've ever liked that played at Duke was Grant Hill. That was the only guy I remember having a lot of class and was a great player. I couldn't stand Leitner. Hurley, don't even get me started about Hurley. Quinn Snyder, I wasn't a big fan of either. Didn't like Billis. Still don't sometimes. Mark Allery, couldn't stand him. Just give me, what was it, Scott Wojciechowski, whatever his name was.
Steve Wojciechowski,
Steve,
yeah.
Scott, whatever. I didn't like either one of them.
Yeah.
Scott or Steve.
Yeah.
Just not a big fan. Johnny Dawkins. I respected Johnny Dawkins. I guess I'd say Johnny Dawkins and Grant Hill are the only two Duke players that I've actually, you know, Zion's an amazing talent. There's some amazing talents Duke's had that I've enjoyed watching their games. But in regards to just for me, class acts, there's only two I can think of. Johnny Dawkins, and I'm going back a ways, and Grant Hill.
Yeah.
And then Elton Brand was.
I was just going to say, it's funny you're talking about Elton Brand.
Elton Brand actually,
he's actually my favorite Duke player, as I think about it.
Elton Brand was pretty classy, too. Don't get me wrong on that. It's just that he's not smart.
Yeah.
Because he made some bad moves throughout the season of 6 years. Now, trust me, I'm not a GM, and I probably would do much worse than he would.
Yeah.
I think I would have kept a shooter around, though. That might have been important. But anyway, he got to deal with cap and all this other stuff. Maybe he'll get it figured out. Now he's got an opening. So if you want to apply, contact Elton Brand. Any Duke fans out there, contact Elton Brand, and you can work for a former Duke player that you used to love. And then he can fire you within a year, and then you won't like him anymore.
There you go.
That'd be fun stuff. City League AD in Wichita dropped this knowledge last night on the Board of Education during their meeting. We have more than 1,500 kids that participate in summer workouts. We had 6 positive cases. The math on that is 0.004%. Basically, what he's saying is we're stopping and doing all this stuff because of that. Of course, there's more to it, of course. More students coming back to school, kids there on campus or whatever. 50,000 kids in the public school district there in Wichita. But it is a point that is should be well taken.
Hey, absolutely.
I read a story today. It was on our news, and it'll be on later today. And I actually added a line to it. It was from the AP. Okay, the AP, Associated Press, is what that stands for. And it was a story about Kansas being nervous, University of Kansas being nervous, going back to school. Campus started again yesterday, first day. And it's about 89 cases. And nowhere in the story did it say the other part of the numbers. And I added it in. It said, well, 89 faculty and students, 87 students, 2 staff members test positive for COVID-19. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, what they didn't mention was there's over 7,000 Kansas students that were tested, and the positivity rate was 1.25%. So 1% of the 7,000 students that were tested positive. But the AP story says nothing about that.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, why this AD is sitting here and saying that. You're looking at the numbers about cases and who's positive, yet hospitalizations, there's nothing there in regards to the students. There's no deaths. There's this and that, and we've had 1,500 kids participate in summer workouts. We've had 6 positive cases. The math is 0.004%, and you're shutting us down? It's a fair point to bring up, man. Very fair. The NBA, the NFL had over, it was a ton of tests. They only had 6 positives once they figured out all these false positive problems with that lab in New Jersey. But they had, I think it was, what was the number? Let me see if I can find it, if I retweeted that or not.
I saw that last night, too.
Did I retweet it? I wish I did. I don't know if I did. There we go. From August 12th to August 20th, the NFL administered over 58,000 COVID-19 tests. 58,000 COVID-19 tests. 6 were positive. Anybody got the math on that? 6 divided into 58,000? That's really, really, really low. So what's going to ruin it for the NFL players and NFL season? It'll be probably the fans. I still wonder if it's the right thing to let any kind of capacity attend. But they better stay away from the players.
Yeah.
And there will be players that might mess it up. You know, just like you know, irresponsible students going to college and partying even though they know they're sick type of thing, like we talked about yesterday. That could easily happen with a player on each team. And there are going to be more cases than the 6 they've had. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But that is a very encouraging number, though. Super encouraging for the NFL.
Without
you think the
doubt.
NFL is going to sit here and go, ah, 1 positive test. Well, that's it. Season's over. I mean, if there's ever a league that's in a fight through this thing, the Major League Baseball's fought through a lot of COVID positives in regards to outbreaks on the Marlins. The Reds had a couple players. The Mets now recently. The Cardinals, of course. And guess what? We're still playing baseball a lot longer than I thought we would. So the NFL, the greatest league in the world, the most profitable, the number one sport in America, do you really think they're going to get bothered if there's 6 positive cases on an NFL team? They'll be bothered, but they ain't going to shut it down.
No.
It's going to take, like, multiple teams with outbreaks for the NFL to shut anything down. And even if they shut it down, they're not going to just call it, we're done this year.
No.
Too much money on the line, people.
And one thing that I kind of talked about one time, month ago or whatever when I was here, is the one thing that's different with the NFL too is, like, if you have a cluster or an outbreak or whatever on your team, you're only going to affect, if you can't play the next weekend, you're only going to affect the one team you're playing. And also, it doesn't affect the whole series of games like Major League Baseball is seeing. You're not getting wiped out for a week because you're playing all those games during that time.
Right.
So, depending on when in the week you find out about it and whatever your protocols are going to be as far as, because they're testing a lot more than other people, obviously.
Right.
And so at that point, you might only miss one game.
Mm-hmm.
And they're easier to reschedule toward the back because you'll have a little bit more extra time, you know, if you need to push back the Super Bowl, because it sounds like the NFL has some of those plans partly started or in place right now. If they have to push back the playoffs, they can.
Yeah.
And they've you know, it sounds like they've reserved hotel rooms in Tampa for like a month after the Super Bowl. So that's all pushed back if it needs to be. It's just so much easier, is what I'm saying. If there is one team that would have a cluster, that you could get all those games in and have an outlier. You know, we need to make this game up for the playoffs or whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
It's just, it seems like it would be easier anyway, just based on that.
Yeah, compared to Major League Baseball, no question. I agree with you on that, totally. And they do have some flexibility there. And like you said, there's a week in between games. So if they got to push a game from a Saturday to a Monday,
yeah,
so be it.
Bye a week.
Yeah.
You know, if you,
got a couple
you could line
weeks.
Something up on that and it works out, you could do that.
Yeah.
You know,
The only wild card to that is going to be the cold weather and about whether the flu combined with COVID.
Uh-huh.
And we still don't know what COVID is going to do during the really cold winter months. It might actually help against COVID, or it might be really bad. We don't know yet.
Yeah.
Because this really came in our world, in our country, basically in February, March.
Late February.
Although March, there might have been cases we had it and people didn't know back in January. But
yeah.
We shall see. But 58,000 COVID tests for the players over an eight-day period, August 12th to the 20th, a whopping six were positive. Now, if you start a story with six positive cases in the National Football League, what do you think people say? They read the headline and go, oh, NFL's got a problem.
Yeah.
If you add in 58,000 tests, which means 57,994 were negative, maybe that should be the headline.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.